Are you a hunter? Some 15 million Americans have a hunting license, but how many of them consider themselves environmentalists? It's hard to say, but among their ranks, Count Brant McDuff, author of the new book, The Shotgun Conservationist, Why Environmentalists Should Love Hunting. Brant is a taxidermist, a public speaker, and a conservation historian who grew up an animal-loving non-hunter. How he came to embrace the activity and why he thinks others should too is at the heart of his book, and he joins us now to share five of his big ideas.
Hi, I'm Brant McDuff. I write about conservation history, taxidermy, wildlife economics, and the strange ways people relate to other animals. Ever since humans started walking onto the scene, other wildlife has had a mixed relationship with us. Today, that relationship can look downright adversarial. Between habitat loss, globalized industrial food systems, invasive species introduced by humans, and the climate crisis, wildlife continue to grapple with what an expanding human footprint leave for them. So, would it surprise you that among all that, hunters are wildlife's closest allies? These are five insights from my book, The Shotgun Conservationist, Why Environmentalists Should Love Hunting, as to how and why hunters and hunting are good for wild animals. Number one, hunting prevents the loss of species and habitat. Hunting requires wild animals, and wild animals require habitat. If the animals that live in a given area are an economic asset, and everyone wants their assets to grow, then the proliferation of species and populations is encouraged. In order for those populations to be healthy and sustainable, they must be managed to a level that gives each individual the opportunity to thrive. That requires unspoiled land for those animals to live on. It doesn't matter if we're talking about Wisconsin, Mongolia, or South Africa. Where individual wild animals have value, their populations and habitats will be valued too. Most of the time, nature only makes money when it's destroyed. Trees are cut for lumber, and the empty land can now be used for human things like mining, drilling, agriculture, and development. But when wild animals are the asset, the land must be left as habitat for them. A forest turned into condos stays condos. But as long as the woods and mountains stay undisturbed, elk or Cape buffalo can be shot annually by paying hunters, and those elk or Cape buffalo will continue to replenish themselves year after year, as long as they have enough unspoiled wild land to live on. The money that comes from hunting makes it a rare industry that puts the utmost value on leaving habitat alone or actively working to improve it on behalf of its wildlife. Number two, trophy hunting isn't bad. Trophy hunting is a complicated issue, to say the least. But in general, no, it's not bad. It works the same way hunting prevents loss of species and habitat by creating real economic value for wildlife and therefore habitat as well. First, we have to define what a trophy is. As someone who has studied the history of taxidermy for many years, I can tell you the definition is more elastic than it might sound, but the term has lost its meaning to the public over time. A young hunter's first squirrel is as much of a trophy to them as the seasoned international hunter's Mongolian Argali ram. However, most people will think of big game in Africa, so let's stick with that for now. When people think of big game hunting in Africa, they usually think of rich white guys spending a lot of money to hunt impressive species they can show off back home. Well, I'm here to tell you that, yes, those guys do exist, but they don't represent the only people who hunt abroad. And more importantly, aside from public acceptance, it wouldn't matter if they did. The intentions of the hunter don't matter. Only the environmental economic cycle they set off does. When people are ignorant of that cycle, they don't get to see how big game hunting prevents poaching, makes wildlife an asset to the local people who live near those animals, and makes the habitat valuable enough to leave as habitat rather than being converted into something else. Number three, hunters are pro-science. Hunting has to be pro-science in order to be sustainable. It's as simple as that. Not only are hunters pro-science, but often they are the science. Every time a hunter reports their harvest, they provide valuable data to state fish and wildlife agencies, whether they realize it or not, about species health, population sizes, migration route fluctuations, and disease tracking. This data has been collected since the 1930s, and every year, the most up-to-date information is used to determine the latest management regulations to ensure wildlife populations maintain healthy numbers or continue to grow. A government program that must pivot annually in accordance with the latest scientific research is a rare thing and an exhaustive machine to maintain. But keeping sustainable wildlife populations in today's world demands that sort of work. When you rely heavily on science, you must leave emotions at the door. That's why doctors don't operate on family members. Their emotional stake could cloud their better judgment. This is often the case with environmental or animal rights groups that oppose hunting. They care about the individual animal so much that the benefits of the greater systems at play in conservation science are misunderstood or ignored. The outcome they like or want becomes more important than the outcome that actually works. Outdoor cats are a prime example of emotion over science. Many people can't stomach the idea of euthanizing feral cats, despite the fact they are widely understood to spread extinction-level disease to wildlife and have directly contributed to the extinction of at least 63 species already. Hunters have hands-on involvement with the cycle of life and death, and that imbues a connection to the reality of nature that is more valuable to them than the impossible fantasy of a world devoid of death. Number four. There is no bloodless food. Not for humans, at least. Something that's not immediately apparent to people is how the vegetarian's bean patty is just as bloody as the hunter's venison burger. This disconnect has been growing steadily in step with the average person's waning involvement with the natural world. A hunter must take the time to learn the ecology of their surroundings and the biology of the species they hunt if they want to be successful. In other words, they have to be aligned with nature if they want to put meat in the freezer. If you want to put a meat substitute in the freezer, you must ignore or be ignorant to the immense toll industrialized agriculture takes on the planet from habitat conversion, water use, soil death, and the lives of wild animals displaced by that industry and purposefully killed by farmers and farming equipment in service of its large-scale production. Hunters prefer to pay into systems that value wildlife habitat with little to no alteration from humans. We have too many people on Earth now to get all of our meat from hunting, but between obscuring the toll industrialized agriculture takes on the planet and seeing a hunter proudly display their success in the field, like holding up a dead animal, the average person takes away a warped message of what constitutes an environmentally friendly meal. The finished product is mostly what we all see, but if the making of a mass-produced meat substitute was shown side-by-side the making of a wild venison steak, the environmental toll of each would be more apparent and easily favor the hunter as the more environmentally friendly choice. There might be a dead deer at the end of a hunt. However, that deer's forest ecosystem will remain, and a new deer can only be made by Mother Nature, not a factory. Number five. We must pay for wildlife. It sounds a little silly to say we need to pay the ocean, or bees, or the forest, or caribou. I mean, how do you transfer money to a giraffe? Hunters pay into local systems and international ecotourism economies to keep wildlife and habitat valuable to regional governments and landowners. As long as a habitat filled with animals continues to pay the bills, it can successfully compete with those more destructive industries like drilling, mining, agriculture, and development. If hunting is outlawed in that region, then it's up to someone to have an economic system in place ahead of that time to continue funding the region's wildlife management, scientific monitoring, and forestry. Otherwise, you'll be left with a defenseless area of land that can't protect itself against those damaging industries that generate their revenue from exploiting it. While hunting might look like exploitation to the untrained eye, now go ahead and picture a hunter next to a dead giraffe, it's a sustainable form of meat acquisition and ecotourism that requires the human footprint on the landscape to be very small in order to be successful. There are more giraffes in African countries that allow giraffe hunting than in countries that don't, and there's a reason for that. Hunters are often misrepresented as being solely Republican or conservative in America. That can make hunting issues seem partisan, which is dangerous when hunting regulations end up in front of a voting public. Many of the successful environmental funding structures we have in America today were put in place by hunters and non-hunters in the 1930s to help wildlife populations rebound and become sustainable. If hunting issues become political instead of environmental, and the end of hunting is the sole desirable outcome without consideration to the economic powerhouses behind it, wildlife will become more vulnerable, not more protected. If we think of the stereotypes associated with American conservatism, like not caring about the environment or not wanting to pay taxes, it becomes even easier to think hunters must not care about the future of the animals or land they hunt, when in reality, hunters, not hikers, are the ones footing the bill for the future of habitat every time they go into the field. It's not a good idea to take away a proven form of habitat and species conservation funding without having a system as good or better in place first. Whether it's through the systems we already have, like hunting, or something new, we must pay for wildlife to be around. Nature is no longer free. Thanks for listening. If you like the book, drop me a line. And if you don't like the book, I look forward to reading your rebuttal book in the future. Happy hunting.
Thank you, Brant. That was Brant McDuff with five big ideas from The Shotgun Conservationist: Why Environmentalists Should Love Hunting. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.